in the land of Terra Nullius, let's not forget that between 1788 and 1992, this country was based on the legal fiction of the Terra Nullius, the land of no one. Now, what we've seen since 1975 is a wholesale attempt by conservative and reactionary elements in the society, led by the Institute of, I call them Pride of Private Affairs, I can't bear myself to bring the word public with them, is to change the narrative. And what's disappointing about today, people remember it's the 50th anniversary of the dismissal of the Whitlam government, and people are still debating whether it was legal or not. But very few people are talking about the long-term reform agenda, which continues to have a significant impact on the lives of every Australian. Whether you access legal aid, a community health centre, use Medicare when you go to the doctor, access we no longer have free education, thank you Mr. Hawke and Mr. Keating, but the thing is that there's been wholesale rewriting of history, and it's seeped out into the general public as if the Whitlam-led Labor government, which was a government based on passing legislation to redistribute wealth, not maintain wealth in the hands of a minuscule minority, but redistribute wealth by bypassing state governments, funding local councils to do necessary work, introducing legislation, as we said, community health centres, community radio, free education, end conscription, recognise China, the list goes on and on and on. Environmental laws, laws regarding equality between men and women, equal pay. And you think, why is this government so much, it's as if it's a turd. It's a political turd when you speak to people in authority. Why is it a political turd? Because it threatened them, irrespective of whether we think we should have a bigger extra parliamentary movement. We don't have a bigger extra parliamentary movement. But what we saw, and this is important, what we saw is ordinary people getting together, demanding reform, and they did it through a political party. The Labor Party would not have embarked on that reform agenda without ordinary people joining that party, being involved in extra parliamentary activity, strikes. Remember, you could strike legally in those days. You could occupy without any, consequences, and the list goes on and on. So why have they attempted to turn this government into the worst government in Australian history, when in reality, regarding its redistribution of wealth agenda, it was the most successful government in Australian history? Why? Because it challenged them. It did challenge them through the parliamentary system. And that's why they needed to be removed. So that's all I can say, is how history is rewritten every day to actually change the historical narrative. And it is done to a large degree to teach us that resistance is pointless. And resistance isn't pointless, as we've been told by most of the speakers today. And that's why we're here. We expected thousands, we've got a dozen.
Yeah, we're going to keep on fighting. I thought at my age, at 74, I'd be able to have a bit of a rest. I became an activist when I was 16, when I went to an Aboriginal mission station with the Methodist Church to lend a hand. I was horrified. I saw young men sleeping on wire frames with no mattresses, concrete floors. It's still going on now. Look down here at this little thing on this, the traditional land of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people. We proudly acknowledge the First Nations people of Victoria, the traditional owners of all the lands from which the representatives of the people of Victoria meet in this parliament. Here at this place, their traditions and ceremonies will always be honoured. It's not true. what are they doing? This treaty, there's not even a treaty, if you listen to Robbie Thorpe. I'm angry and I'm getting angrier by with every birthday, and I'll continue. Thank you.
I want to briefly invoke the ghost of Monty Miller here, best remembered as an industrial workers of the world activist and fighter against conscription in World War One. What's less remembered is that he was also a pioneer of the Australian Labor Party. At the same time as being a direct actionist and seeing the need for a mass direct action movement, he also saw the use of parliamentary action. And he always knew what would happen with the Labor Party. He believed still that it was worth the candle pushing that line of endeavour separate from his work as a wobbly. I am gratified actually to see people like Joe, who's been I first met as a hardliner, stay away from Parliament at all costs, taking on that it is more complex than that. And you can afford to be a pure direct actionist if somebody else is doing the parliamentary work. When you're actually rebuilding an effective movement for change, you've got to pay regard to the complexity of it. Okay, everyone's doing the personal experience. My first demonstrations and I think first arrests were in anti-Kerr. I was in university in the first place because Whitlam and the Labor government had made it free. My first arrests, my first demonstrations, my first time being thrown around with cops was in protesting the dismissal. I think we all understood on a gut level the whole gamut of the movement against the class system is important. The Labor Party at the moment is no longer that. We will see. We will see if that can be regenerated. I hope it can. My best wishes to all Labor Party activists who are trying to do that.
Somebody mentioned about conscription, and it reminded me of my brother, Matt. When I was about 11, 10, 11, he was conscripted into the army. He didn't want to go. He'd just finished his apprenticeship. He had a girlfriend. He had his life ahead of him. And he was forced to go into the army. And he was a driver. So after he'd been there for about a year, he had a best friend, Peter Trumbull. And one day he went with Peter to visit Peter's wife and his three-month-old baby. And Peter said, "I'm not going back." And my brother said, "You have to. If you don't, you'll be able, they'll lock you up." And he said, "How can I go and leave them?" My brother persuaded him, "You have to go and leave them." As he was driving back, his truck rolled over and Peter was killed. And I was horrified at the amount of power the government had over people to force them into employment that they didn't want to do. And, you know, ultimately it was Peter's life. And I think that influenced me when it came around to Whitlam and his policies. And after 18 months, my brother was pulled into a hall with all the other army people. And they were told, "Change of government, you're free, you can go, walk out. You don't have to do this anymore." And it was such a fantastic day. Yeah, so after 18 months, he would have had to do 3 years. But so that was a happy end to his story. So he got on with his life.
Yeah, look, I'm just thinking about that strike that I was involved in. It's amazing what a reformist government like the Whitlam government was can make ordinary workers feel that they have the power to do things. And I don't think I had any specific politics in mind. It was just some inchoate feeling that things had to change, that the wealthy had to be brought to account. We haven't seen a lot of that. But that when people stick together, when people stand together, they can affect, change and influence others to feel the same way.
Yeah, thank you, Gough Whitlam and the Labor government, with all the support you gave us back then. And also for the supporters in for the single mothers, and other supports in the community that was very, very important at the time, and supporting public housing.
The Whitlam Labor government was the closest thing we've had to anything that resembles reform. Reform on a human level, reform on a socialist level, reform for all people, not just the select few, like we're seeing at the moment. Thank you.
Now, I'm interested in this concept that most people don't seem to grasp. It's only during a period of a reformist government that a radical strategy is able to be implemented. Because those of us who are old enough to remember the Whitlam government, we were young people in our early, mid-20s. Remember the rank and file groups within the trade union movements, the Sydney BLF and their direct democratic and agenda. Remember all the small groups that are involved, even things like the Collingwood Children's Farm accessing land that was vacant and using it for community use. And many of these things occur during a reformist period. The Russian Revolution didn't occur when the Tsar was in power. It occurred when the reformist government was in power. The changes that occurred in Spain during the Spanish Revolution, the radical changes occurred after the left-wing government, which was supported by the anarchists, socialists and communists, came into power. So when you have a reformist government in action, it gives the extra parliamentary movement extra breathing space. You don't have ASIO on your back. As you remember that Mr. Murphy, the Attorney General, raided ASIO because at that particular point in time, Croatian nationalists were creating havoc in Melbourne and Sydney by bombing targets. And it was obvious that ASIO was not interested in that because they were part of the anti-communist front, which they had supported for 27 years. So what I'm saying is, there is a reason to support reform. Revolution doesn't come, as a lot of people think, from abject poverty. Abject poverty creates a mentality where you're honed in on survival.
Yep.
And I learned that on these steps in 2016, when we were here 24 hours a day for 10 days, because I had to think about where I'm going to have a piss, where I'm going to have a shit, how am I going to keep warm, how am I going to keep the rain off, and these were these day-to-day things. When people say to me, why aren't the homeless involved in the struggle for public housing? Because they're involved in a struggle for survival. So what I'm saying is, reformist governments give the opportunity for radical action.